Hello, this is Tom Scott with the Ford County Chronicle for Wednesday, July 8th, 2026. We begin on the front page, above the fold, big headlines, Ford County Circuit Court. User may avoid prison. Retired PBL teacher expected to get probation for soliciting teenager for sex. Pontiac. Ford County's prosecutor and Paul L. Muser's attorney have agreed to recommend that the former Paxton Buckley Loda High School teacher be sentenced to probation for soliciting a teenager for sex. During a hearing Monday, defense attorney Lance Cagle said the uncontested sentence is part of a fully negotiated plea agreement and simply awaiting confirmation by Judge Mary Cole, who set sentencing for 12:30 p.m. Monday, July 20th. This isn't a contested sentencing hearing that's going to occur here, Cagle said. Muser, 72, of Buckley, pleaded guilty on May 6th to charges of grooming, a Class 4 felony, and indecent solicitation of a child, a Class 3 felony. In exchange, State's Attorney Andrew Killian agreed to dismiss two Class 2 felony counts of attempted criminal sexual assault. While sentencing was originally expected to occur at this week's hearing, it was pushed back by 2 weeks due to a delay in receiving a report on Muser's sex offender evaluation from the Community Resource and Counseling Center in Paxton. According to Cagle, CRCC's clinical supervisor, Caitlin Satoff, indicated that the evaluation was completed on June 1st and that the report for the report should be ready for the court by mid-July. Cagle said he would ask Satoff to accelerate things to the best of her ability. The July 20th sentencing hearing will be held remotely via the Zoom app from Cole's Livingston County Courtroom in Pontiac. It is expected to last less than half an hour, according to Cole, who was assigned the case after it was filed in Ford County Circuit Court. Ahead of the sentencing, Muser remains free from custody on home confinement via a pretrial release order entered on May 6th and amended on Monday. In all, Muser served 52 days in jail between his March 16th arrest and his release from custody on May 7th. On Monday, Cole granted Cagle's motion to amend the condition of Muser's pretrial release to allow him to reside through July 20th at the Paxton Inn, 980 West Ottawa Road, instead of at the Paxton home of his sister, Mary Parsons, as previously ordered. Cagle said the move would allow for Parsons' grandchildren to visit her home, which they have been unable to do while Muser has been there. "It's essentially a hardship on Mrs. Parsons at this point," Cagle told Cole, "and that's the reason we're filing the motion." All other conditions of release remain unchanged, including that Muser be subject to home confinement and electronic GPS monitoring, and be accompanied by an adult in the event he must leave his home, have no contact with the victim or any other minor, and not use any internet-capable devices unless under the supervision of an adult and for the purposes of banking, medical telehealth, court-ordered services, or other needs approved by the Office of Statewide Pretrial Services, the OSPS. Killian said he had no objection to the change in Muser's address under the condition that another adult be there to monitor his activities for the next 2 weeks, just as Parson had been doing since May. If that is not possible, Killian suggested that the court maintain the status quo with Muser continuing to live with his sister. "We're 2 weeks out from sentencing," Killian noted. "I say maintain the status quo until the sentence is confirmed." Meanwhile, Cagle pointed out that the original pretrial release order never required that Muser be monitored at all times while at home. The current pretrial release order does not require 24/7 confinement. It does not require 24/7 supervision by any other individual, Cagle said. Mr. Muser is allowed, under the terms of the order, to be at his place of residence alone. What Mr. Killian is asking for is an expansion of that order. That is not required right now. I don't believe the danger to the community is sufficient to justify having someone living with Mr. Muser at the hotel, and that's not required under the current order. Cagle also argued that Muser has been compliant so far with all conditions of pretrial release. He's had no violations, there have been no issues with his pretrial release and home confinement, Cagle said. OSPS officer Christiana Wallace confirmed that to be true. He's been reporting as he is supposed to, Wallace said. I've not gotten any violations. While Cagle said he had no issues with perhaps the periodic monitoring of Muser, Killian noted that until he is sentenced to probation, making him subject to home visits by probation officers, the responsibility cannot fall on OSPS officers since they are not authorized to make home visits. OSPS does not have the authority to do that, Killian said. And I don't think that Mr. Cagle's suggestion that we order OSPS to do something they don't have the authority to do is a good idea at this point. Furthermore, OSPS can only monitor that which a client freely offers or tell them about. Like I said, they cannot do home searches, they cannot do drop-in surprise visits. While Parsons has not been ordered by the court to monitor Muser either, Killian said the purpose of allowing Muser to live with her was to ensure that he did not obtain an electronic device that he's not permitted to have. She is there to make sure that he's not using a computer unrestricted, Killian said. That was the purpose of him being released to a responsible adult's home. In making her ruling, Cole noted that Muser's sister is not an agent of law enforcement or an agent of this court, and as such has no obligation to participate in this case or this monitoring in any way. According to charging documents, Muser, a former driver's education and physical education teacher at PBL High School, allegedly invited a female teenager to his home last Christmas Eve, intending to commit a sexual act with the teen. Also, over the course of nearly a year, between January 2025 and December 24, 2025, Muser allegedly offered the team snacks and money, discussed things of a sexual nature, including his desire to perform acts of sexual penetration with the child, and exchanged emails with the teen outside of school, according to charging documents. Muser was placed on administrative leave from his job at PBL High School in March, only to resign days later. Muser, a 2024 PBL Alumni Hall of Fame inductee and 1972 Paxton High School graduate, was a Hall of Fame head boys basketball coach and teacher in Oklahoma before he returned to Paxton a few years ago. According to state statute, the grooming charge carries penalties ranging from up to 30 months of probation to 1 to 3 years in prison, while the charge of indecent solicitation of a child is punishable by a sentence ranging from up to 30 months of probation to 2 to 5 years in prison. Turning back to the front page, development on Paxton's southwest side. In due time, Paxton residents hungry to learn which new fast food restaurant is on way. Paxton. As speculation continues to swirl around which fast food restaurant will be attached to the new convenience store and gas station being built on Paxton's west side, those in the know remain tight-lipped. Mayor Bill Ingold, for one, is not saying. That is their story to tell, Ingold said of the developers of the new commercial development just east of the Interstate 57 interchange. They are their developers. They are putting money into it. They would like to make the announcement. That announcement is not coming just yet, either. I talked with one of the owners, the mayor said later in a text message, and he said he will be glad to talk about the project, just not right now. Since construction of the development began this spring at the former Paxton Auto Laundry and Lube Center property at 580 South Cherry Street, plus two other parcels behind that lot at 552 and 560 South Cherry Street, there has been a surge of speculation about what quick-serve restaurant is on the way. The owners of the Paxton Commercial Investment Group, LLC, the project's developer, said last year it would be a national fast food chain, but declined to name it. On social media, practically everyone seems to think they know the answer, and some might just might. Some have said it will be a Dairy Queen, as reportedly stated by construction workers on site, but Dairy Queen's corporate office is not saying that, too, at least not just yet. It's premature to share info at this time, a Dairy Queen spokesman said via email when asked whether a new DQ was being built in Paxton. Feel free to check back in 6 months. In 6 months, though, there should be no question about which new restaurant is here. Ingle said construction is on target for completion within just 4 to 5 months, likely in October or November. It's going to start taking shape pretty soon, the mayor said after visiting the construction site on Tuesday, June 30th. Everything is going good. Everything is going smoothly. Already, the frame of the 7,840-square-foot convenience store restaurant building and the underground 30,000-gallon fuel tank for the gas station are in place. According to the building permit application for the 70-by-112-foot one-story building, obtained from the city via a Freedom of Information Act request, it will include 12 rooms, including a gaming room, and cost an estimated $3,695,994. The lot will include 12 fuel pumps, at least 3 electric vehicle charging stations, and 15 parking spaces, including one handicapped parking space. The building permit application, dated February 27th, and approved by building administrator Matt Rock on March 18th, listed the project's architect as Jeff Jarvis of Kankakee and the contractor as Hillside Development Group, LLC, of Iroquois. The application listed the owner as Harish Patel of Monticello, one of the owners of the Paxton Commercial Investment Group. According to public records, he also owns Subway restaurants in both Paxton and Monticello and the Bement Cafe in Bement. Also, he owns Illinois-based corporation called Dotsie Watsika LLC, JSK MA Hospitality LLC, and the recently established Dotsie Paxton LLC and Dotsie Paxton Dairy LLC. These guys are businessmen, Ingold said of Patel and his Paxton Commercial Investment Group colleagues. It's a very well thought out professional plan for the project. I mean, they know down to what kind of candy bars sell the best. So it's not like they're going in there and just saying, hey, let's see what works. They have a pretty good plan, and they want to make it right in Paxton, and they want to do what is good for Paxton. They've told me that. Ingle said he hopes the new gas station and restaurant will be a popular stop for northbound and southbound travelers on nearby I-57, one that is safe and clean, where people can get gas, use the restrooms, get food, or go buy snacks or whatever else they might want to get. In addition to boosting the city's sales and property tax revenue, the new business is expected to employ an estimated 35 staff, developers have said. Ingle said the city council will likely consider approval of a proposed redevelopment agreement for the project, which is located in the city's tax increment financing, the TIF district, during its next meeting at 7 p.m. Thursday, July 14th at City Hall. The agreement would reimburse the developers for eligible costs to redevelop the property. There's going to be a TIF agreement with them, Ingold said. And in other restaurant news from Paxton, Tokyo Hibachi and Sushi opens in Paxton. Carry-out-only eatery operated by native of Indonesia gives a hit so far with local customers. A taste of Japan has come to the land of the Swedes. Tokyo Hibachi and Sushi opened recently at 442 South Market Street in Paxton. So far, it's good, owner Fru Barudin said of business while sitting at a picnic table outside the restaurant on a sweltering day. The new eatery had opened less than a week before. Baharudin has a yen for Japanese food. The Paxton Eatery marks the third one the native of Indonesia has opened in central Illinois, although it is the first brick-and-mortar place. He also operates two food trucks, the first one in his town of residence, Lincoln, and the second one at 505 South Tanner Street in Rantoul that he has operated for 3 years. It's the same food, he said, adding that each business is a carry-out operation with no interior customer seating. Outdoor seating is available at the Paxton Rest Business. Baharudin said he got into Japanese food preparation by working at a Japanese restaurant in Champaign. While Baharudin continues to reside 90 minutes away in Lincoln, he has also taken an apartment in Paxton. Sometimes I drive and sometimes not, he said. The Paxton Eatery employs 2 full-time workers and 4 part-time. The Paxton business is open from 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sunday through Thursday. It opens 3 to 8 p.m. Fridays and noon to 8 p.m. Saturday. The telephone number is 217-735-0273. Baharudin said one customer favorite so far is the deep-fried Paxton roll. From the hibachi menu, it's chicken with rice and vegetables or chicken with noodles. Bill and Karen Mock of Bales Lake happened to see the new business was open and gave it a try this week. They ordered the chicken bento box. Bill Mock said the food was pretty good. We will be definitely going back, he said. The restaurant site at the intersection of Market and Franklin Street south of Paxton's downtown had been vacant for several months following the closure of Paxton Pop, a short-lived food establishment that opened there in September 2024. The building earlier was Dad's Frozen Custer, then a hot dog stand, and later Moretti's Bakery. It had been vacant a few years prior to Paxton Pop moving in. According to local historian Patrick Taverner, it started out as a service station in 1927, before Ripley's Drive-In opened there in 1950, then Hazel's about 1970, then Nino's and Ferrera's. Local pharmacist Andy Hudson said it was also a pizza place, possibly Paxton's first, before it was Nino's. And then we're going to have a letter from the new superintendent of the Paxton Buckley Schools. A privilege to join the Panther family. Eric Bohm officially began his new job as the Paxton Buckley Lota School District Superintendent on Wednesday, July 1. And wrote the following note to parents, guardians, and the community as published on the district's website last week. It is with immense pride and excitement and a deep sense of responsibility that I write to introduce myself as the new superintendent of Paxton Buckley Lota Community Unit School District 10. From my initial conversations with members of the Board of Education and staff, it is clear that the Panther spirit is defined by resilience, dedication, and a shared passion for educational excellence. PBL has a long-standing tradition of fostering high-achievement environments across our schools, and I look forward to building upon that strong foundation alongside each of you. My core philosophy is centered on putting students first in every decision we make. I believe that a thriving school district relies heavily on a robust partnership between the schools and the home. Your insights, engagement, and support are invaluable to our mission. Over the next several weeks and throughout the upcoming school year, my primary focus will be to listen, learn, and engage with our community to fully understand the unique strengths and opportunities within our district. I look forward to meeting with you at school events, athletic competitions, and community gatherings in the coming months. Please know that my door is always open, and I welcome your feedback as we work together to ensure the students of PBLCUSD 10 receive a world-class education that prepares them for lifelong success. It is a privilege to join the Panther family. I look forward to partnering with all of you to make this upcoming school year truly exceptional. Now we'll turn to the obituaries in the Ford County Chronicle for Wednesday, July 8th. Patrick S. Donovan, Gallatin, Tennessee. Patrick S. Pat Donovan, 39, of Gallatin, Tennessee, the son of Gibson City natives, died Wednesday, June 17th, surrounded by his family. A private service and celebration of his life will be at a later date. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made to the Breakthrough Research Fund through ALD Connect, and that's aldconnect.org. Daryl J. Harry, or Harry, H-A-R-I, Morton. Daryl J. Harry, 80, of Morton, formerly of Cisna Park, died Wednesday, July 1st, at his residence. Private family services will be Friday, July 10th at the Knapp Funeral Home in Cisna Park. Burial will be in Graceland Cemetery in Valparaiso, Indiana. Memorials may be made to St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. Erwin Crumwitty, Beardstown. Erwin C. Fritz Crumwitty, 88, of Beardstown, passed away peacefully on Thursday, July 2nd at Memorial Hospital in Springfield after a lengthy illness. Funeral services were held Wednesday, July 8th at the First United Methodist Church of Beardstown, followed by burial in the Beardstown City Cemetery. In lieu of flowers, the family suggests memorial donations be made to Beardstown Lions, Beardstown Elks, or Matthew 25 Shelter. Carol E. Lange, or could be Lange, L-A-N-G-E, Gibson City. Carol E. Lange, 89, of Gibson City, died Tuesday, June 30th at Accolade Healthcare of Paxton on Pels. Visitation will be from 10 to 10:45 a.m. Saturday, July 11th at the Rosenbaum Funeral Home in Gibson City with a short memorial service to follow. Burial will be at 11 a.m. at the Drummer Township Cemetery in Gibson City. Memorial contributions may be made to St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. Brooke N. Mullins, Loda. Brooke Nicole Mullins, 45, of Loda, died at 10:02 p.m. Monday, June 29th at the Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Funeral services were held Friday, July 3rd at the First Lutheran Church in Paxton with the Reverend Scott Smith officiating. Burial followed at Glen Cemetery in Paxton. Memorials may be made to the family for a college fund for her daughters in care of the Frederick Community Bank of Paxton. Richard E. Roman, Paxton. Richard Elmer Roman, 91, of Paxton, died at 6:58 p.m. Saturday, July 4th at Arcadia Care in Watseka. A graveside service was held at 11 a.m. Friday, July 10th at Oak Lawn Memorial Gardens in Galesburg. Memorials may be made to a charity of the donor's choice. Nathan A. Savoy, or Savoy, S-A-V-O-I-E, Paxton. A celebration of life for Nathan Andre Savoy, 36, of Taylorville, a graduate of the Paxton-Buckley-Loda High School, will be at 1 p.m. Sunday, July 26th at Pell's Park in Paxton. Mr. Savoy died Friday, June 12th at Loyola University Medical Center in Chicago. Jim Seidel, Cisna Park. Jim Seidel, 78, of Cisna Park, died Friday, July 3rd, at his home. A visitation was held on Wednesday, July 8th, at the Cox Knapp Funeral Home in Rankin. Memorials may be made to the Cisna Park Fire Department, Iroquois Memorial Hospice, the Grace Lutheran Church in Rankin, or an organization of the donor's choice. In honor of the 250th birthday of the United States, we close with a speech that was made by Dean Paxson resident Dean Geiken, who shared this speech that he gave at a 4th of July prayer breakfast at St. John's Evangelical Lutheran Church of Schwer, where he is a member. When most people think of the American Revolution, they think of great names, such as George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Benjamin Franklin, and the other founding fathers. On this, the 250th anniversary of our nation's birth, they think of the Declaration of Independence and the creation of a new nation. But nations are not created by documents alone. A declaration written on paper means little unless there are men and women willing to defend it. When I was asked to speak about the American soldier of the Revolutionary War, I wasn't quite sure where to begin. But throughout my years of reading and studying the Revolution, one common thread has always connected nearly every story of the war: the ordinary soldier of the Continental Army. What kind of person leaves behind home, family, livelihood, and perhaps even a future, to take up a musket and march off to war? The American Revolution was not won by politicians gathered in Philadelphia. It was won by ordinary Americans who were willing to endure extraordinary hardships. In 1776, George Washington wrote, "The fate of millions will now depend under God on the courage and conduct of this army." Most of these men were not professional soldiers. They were farmers, tradesmen, laborers, shopkeepers, frontiersmen, and sailors. Some were immigrants, some were enslaved men or indentured servants seeking freedom and opportunity. Most had never seen battle before, yet these were the men who stood against what was arguably the most powerful military force in the world. Without them, there would be no United States of America. The story of the Revolutionary Soldier is not simply a story of victory, it is a story of endurance. History remembers iconic Revolutionary War victories such as Lexington and Concord, Saratoga and Yorktown. What it often forgets are the long days and longer nights between those victories. Less remembered are the hunger, sickness, cold, uncertainty, and fear faced by the American soldier of the Revolution. One of the greatest witnesses to these hardships was Joseph Plum Martin, a young volunteer in the Continental Army. Unlike many who wrote about the Revolution from the perspective of generals and statesmen, Martin wrote about the war as an ordinary soldier. He described what it was like to live, march, fight, and suffer among the rank and file. At one point he wrote, "We are absolutely, literally starved. I do solemnly declare that I did not put a single morsel of victuals into my mouth for 4 days and as many nights. I saw several of the men roast their old shoes and eat them, and I was afterward informed by one of the officers' waiters that some of the officers killed and ate a favorite little dog." Think about that for a moment. 4 days without food, roasting and eating your shoes, killing and eating a beloved dog, and that was while still being expected to march, stand guard, drill, and prepare for battle. And because they did, we gather here today as citizens of the United States of America. As we look back upon their service 250 years later, I believe the words of General George S. Patton, who spoke about another group of American soldiers fighting a war for the freedom of the world, sum up nicely my thoughts on these soldiers. Thank God such men lived. Thank you. Happy 250th birthday, and God bless the United States of America. And that is all the time we have for this week's reading of the Ford County Chronicle. This is Tom Scott. I look forward to reading with you again very soon.